Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. I'm getting up
soon in the morning. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, we're going to learn about the inflammatory factor underlying most cancers, and most importantly, what you can do about it. You've heard me mention many times over the years that cancer, diabetes, dementia, Alzheimer's, arthritis, fibromyalgia, these all have one common denominator, and that is something that we have been exposed to that causes inflammation. What can we do about that? So today we're going to show you how to turn off inflammation in the breast that could help prevent and save a lot of women from breast cancer. For the women in our audience suffering from menopausal hot flashes, I've got a solution for you. Also, to take a simple herb into the system is to reduce a beta-amyloid, which corrects cognitive impairment in Alzheimer's. I'll tell you what that single item is, and why this fruit, this berry, is so effective as a weapon in the war against Alzheimer's. University of Cincinnati on that. And today, the rise of the tart cherry as a medicinal food, quite simply one of the most important things as a food that we can take in to help ourselves. And exercise, not diet, changed the gut microbiomes in this study from the University of Missouri. Also, later today, in the second half, we're going to have two guests in studio. We're going to be talking first with Mark Hertzgard about the conscience of a whistleblower and the threats and blowback they face. I have helped a lot of people understand that everything that they think and do can impact their cells. And it's sometimes hard to appreciate because let's say that you have alcohol one night and maybe you got a buzz and the next day you feel fine. You think, well, no harm done. Not true. The difference is that the harm may not be enough harm cumulatively in that moment for you to have a breakdown of a system. Like with each glass of hard alcohol, you're going to kill about 1 million brain, liver, kidney, and heart cells. Now, the liver has the capacity to rejuvenate itself about 60%, but not so with the brain, the heart, and the kidneys. But if you have hundreds of billions of cells, then you think, well, what's the big deal? I could drink hard alcohol 40 years before I'd see any effect. So I'm 32, I'm 26, I'm 19. What's the deal? Well, what we don't take into account is how many of the things we're doing at the same time that are pro-inflammatory that are causing damage. And generally, the consciousness of a person who is doing something that is adverse to their well-being is not employing a positive response to do something good for their well-being. It's not as if they do good things all the time and occasionally slip. You know, that wouldn't be, you know, a big problem. What we have in America today is almost everything we do is wrong. Almost everything and everything in our lives, outside of possibly our careers. And even that I would challenge, depending upon the career and where you work and what the consequences are to other people, the environment, for you to make your living. So that brings me to the subject of cancer, specifically breast cancer. About 95 to 98% of all cancers can be shown to be environmental. And part of that environment is our diet. We know that alcohol can cause stomach cancer, esophageal cancer, colorectal cancer, high protein, high meat diet can do the same for colorectal cancer, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, and prostate cancer. Now, imagine if you're the average person and you're socializing and look at all those ads, right? Come out to our place and get all the food that you can eat for $12. And it's always unhealthy food. In that food, there are inflammatory causative agents. And in the body, you're going to stimulate what is called nuclear factor kappa B, or NFKB. You may not have heard of that, but that plays a central role in the onset of malignant breast cancer. A team of researchers, according to David Hoffnung in Life Extension, found that breast cancer cells require a specific inflammatory cascade in order to proliferate and metastasize. And as one of the proteins that activates genes involved in inflammation, this NFKB, nuclear factor kappa B, is the master regulator of this pathological condition that leads to cancer. So, that's the bad news. So if you're taking pro-inflammatory agents, what are the pro-inflammatory agents? Coffee, any alcohol, sugars, artificial sweeteners, a lot of carbonated beverages, processed foods, refined carbohydrates, lots of meat, dairy, those can precipitate the inflammation. So what can I do to help protect myself? Well, the good news is that upwards of 90% of human cancer could be prevented by modifications to lifestyle, specifically the diet, and suppression of the NFKB by phytochemicals present in fruits and vegetables would be the first line of defense. Now, many of the spices that we take in, many of these phytonutrients, are rich in antioxidants, and we know that vitamin C is an antioxidant. And how it works is this. The more vitamin C you have in your body, which is why I suggest you take it about 8 times a day, depending upon your state of health, what you're exposed to, the amount of exercise you're doing, it will stay in your body anywhere from a couple of hours to 6-7 hours. But it's trapping free radicals, which cause disease, and then neutralizing them. And that's a good thing. If we don't do that, then we end up with what is known as oxidative damage to the DNA. And that's when you have a hamburger, a hot dog, or pizza, you're taking in these pro-inflammatory elements that can cause that damage. So the more antioxidants you take in throughout the day, the more you're able to block the NFKB, and that adds a big degree of safety onto your side. So vitamin E, vitamin C, the carotenoids, the thiol, T-H-I-O-L, thiol antioxidants, those would be glutathione, a thioredoxidin, that's T-H-I-O-R-E-D-O-X-I-N, and lipoic acid, lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, plus your flavonoids, polyphenols, selenium, zinc, those make a big difference. And the flavonoid lutein, L-U-T-E-O-L-I-N, for example, can sensitize cancer cells so that they're easier to kill. Milk thistle extracts enhance prostate cancer cell death, which is what you want. And vitamin E, the gamma tocopherol, and tocotrienols. Toco, T-O-C-O, tri, T-R-I, enol, E-N-O-L, tocotrienol. It downregulates the NFKB in pancreatic tumor cells, and that's good. And then you have your real superstars, the superstars to help you with lymphomas, leukemias, pancreatic cancer, bladder cancer, colon cancer, and cancer of the bile ducts would be curcumin. Nothing better. Cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N. It helps to suppress the cancer-provoking inflammation that is generated by obesity, which is one of today's most common conditions. Garlic is also good. Garlic, like turmeric, from which curcumin is made, has a long, rich history of helping people with problems. And that is because garlic extracts include the diol sulfides and the other components, which are sulfur groups. Those help with bacteria, viruses, but they're also good for colon cancer and malignant neoblastomas and melanomas. Ginger is good. Now, ginger is a spice that we first learned about from Southeast Asia. It's terrific, and there's a chemical in ginger called gingerol, G-I-N-G-E-R-O-L, and also phenolic compounds. So they're good. They're helping. So that's what you need to do. I would add in green tea, isoflavones, and omega-3 fatty acids. Then, let's say that you yourself or someone you know is not going to make the healthiest lifestyle choices, but at least if you are compensating by taking those nutrients two or three times a day, you're putting a lot of nutritional security on your side. Now, for the women in this audience who are suffering from menopausal hot flashes, some good news. Exercise every day can make an enormous difference in fewer hot flashes in a 24-hour period following your physical activity. So if you were to go out in the morning and do a jog, a bike run, swim, or power walk, you can reasonably expect to reduce your hot flashes a tremendous amount on a daily basis. So something as simple as that. Now, for those of you who are suffering or have a family member suffering from Alzheimer's or dementia, you know that they're losing a lot of cognition. They simply will walk in a room and not recognize the room. Or they'll look at something and not recognize what they were looking at. They frequently won't even recognize you or your name. And that is important that we do something to help that. Well, now there's something you can take orally. According to this study, and this study was from the Department of Molecular Microbiology and Biotechnology, Tel Aviv University in Israel, and it was also done at Northwestern University in Chicago, the Department of Cell and Molecular Biology, a simple extract of cinnamon. What, quote, here's what it says. This is from the abstract. An increasing body of evidence indicates the accumulation of soluble assemblies of B amyloid polypeptides play a key role in Alzheimer's disease pathology. And then at the bottom it talks about how this was reduced with the oral administration of cinnamon. So, now, Celanese cinnamon is one of your best. Jamaican cinnamon is also very good. I would take a quarter of a teaspoon. You could put it in a health drink. You could put it in an oatmeal, a millet, but get it into their bodies. I would also use it if you had diabetes or prediabetes. And blueberries are also, according to the University of Cincinnati, an effective weapon in the war against Alzheimer's. A pint of blueberries or some blueberry concentrate is an enormous, quote, here's what it says, could hold a colossal promise in the fight against Alzheimer's disease. Quote from the study, University of Cincinnati, new research adds to the growing evidence that blueberries bursting with antioxidants could help diminish the devastating effects of dementia. Blueberries are already known as a superfruit thanks to their documented contribution to lowering the risk of heart disease and cancer. But now newly released study finds that certain flavonoids found in blueberries could also hold the key to lessening the effects of Alzheimer's disease. And then it goes on to talk about the study. So, let's get blueberries. In this case, use blueberry powder. But let's get fresh blueberries or blueberry powder, blueberry concentrates into our system. And finally, this is why I definitely recommend that you have in your system tart cherry. Now, tart cherry is an extraordinarily powerful weapon. There are several berries. Bilberry helps your eyes. Hawthorn berry helps your heart. Cranberries help your urinary tract. Blueberries help lower blood pressure. But cherries are different. They help you with gout. They can help turn off pain of arthritis. They can also help you sleep better. That's correct, because there was a double-blind study, and they found that those that took the tart cherry, the Montmorency cherry juice, and they compared that with a placebo drink, had a substantial improvement in quality of sleep. And there was also a study that showed that cherries lower the blood pressure. They did a double-blind study of men with high blood pressure, and they found that either the systolic blood pressure or the diastolic blood pressure were improved and versus a placebo. So why? Well, they know it helps with immunity. They know it has very powerful polyphenols, And it's just at the top of the list, so make sure that you're getting your tart cherries. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. In a few moments, we're going to talk with our guest today about the conscience of a whistleblower and the threats and blowback they face. Very interesting discussion coming up. But we're going to take just a quick break here to raise some money for this non-profit radio program and station. And I'm giving you probably the best special of the year. Here it is. You're going to get, if you're watching this, and you can watch this over Ustream, this is my greens and grains. This is a phenomenal product. It has the nutrients that I believe are important for you. It's only 59 calories. You're getting a high-quality protein, but more importantly, it's the greens. And this is kosher, and it's vegan. Here's what you're getting in this raw, natural. You're getting the alfalfa, the organic flax seeds, the kamut, oatgrass, pumpkin seeds, quinoa sprouts, kamut sprouts, spelt sprouts, amaranth sprouts, the very powerful the fructooleosaccharides, which are the very important good bacteria, yucca, ginger root, chia seeds, Panax ginseng, bromelain, five types of seaweed, including laminaria, and L-area, and dulse, and also fennel, and 8 billion probiotics from non-dairy sources, and mixed carotenoids. It has a delicious all-natural cherry pineapple flavor coming from the cherry pineapple juice and stevia, and that's it. There's nothing else in here. Now, this is taken generally with green stuff, but you can also take this as a substitute. This gives you all those greens and all those grains and all the phytonutrients that are in those that are unique to this product. I take this every single day. In fact, I take it a couple times a day. It's called Greens and Grains. Now, this is something, in fact, there's a very famous holistic dentist in New York City who says this is the best toothpaste she's ever seen. Why? Because this is my toothpaste. Fluoride-free, no sugar, no saccharin, no artificial flavors, and all-natural whitening has a delicious mint flavor. But here's what you're getting in it. You're getting a special blend of clove oil, tea tree oil, a wintergreen oil, myrrh extract, lavender extract, marigold, pure dew, basil extract, nutmeg extract, guar gum, calcium carbonate, which is baking soda, menthol, water, and natural glycerin, which is a vegetable base. It is all vegan. You don't get any healthier for your teeth and your gums than this. This is terrific, and you get a year supply. So this is what I'm saying. You're going to get 12 of these, all right? 12 toothpaste, the clean teeth toothpaste. Both of those, which are valued at $200, you're getting for $69.95. You're saving $130. Wow. That's a phenomenal savings. So, here's the deal. You're going to call this number, 877-627-5065. We have 523 of these, I believe, as of today. And so, you call now, and you get your greens and grains, which everyone should be taking in this audience, flooding your body with a variety of phytonutrients, antioxidants, And plus, you're getting a year supply of toothpaste, $200 value for $69.95. That's a phenomenal savings, a $130 savings. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Now, we're going to take a break. Come right back with my guest. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Noll. Joining me in studio, we have two guests. Mark Hertzgard is an American journalist who's been called one of America's finest reporters by Barbara Ehrenreich, who I have a lot of respect for. And for the past 25 years, Mark has focused his investigations into the ecological fate of the earth and food security and poverty in agriculture. He's also a writer on the national security state. Mark is the environmental correspondent for The Nation and reports on ecological issues for Vanity Fair, The New Yorker, Mother Jones, and other publications. And he is also the author of six important books, including Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. His most recent work is Brave Hearts, Whistleblowing in the Age of Snowden. His website is Mark, I'll spell the last name, HERTZGARD.com. Mark is joined by John Crane. That's C-R-A-N-E. John is a former senior Pentagon investigator and a longtime assistant to the Pentagon's Inspector General in the office assigned to protect whistleblowers and the persons coming forth with complaints about wrongdoing. He is duly featured in Mark's book, Brave Hearts, and gained whistleblower status himself for coming forth with information about how the Pentagon and the National Security Agency undermine the entire whistleblowing process and laws. Nice to have you both with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Gary.
Mark, we'll begin with you.
Sure.
In the past, we've had several whistleblowers on this program. Thomas Drake, Colonel N, who was very important in doing the important work and right, Bill Binney, Sybil Edmonds, and others. And what singles him out from others working in federal agencies who'd rather play by the rules and suppress their deeper conscience and values is that these people are true whistleblowers. And they may be afraid, but they're not showing it. And they know that wrong is being done. Why else would anyone put themselves under such unpleasant circumstances to blow the whistle on wrongdoing if there's nothing material to be gained from it? So, Mark, I'd like you to begin by asking, addressing this issue. We are told by the president, several attorney generals, the current one and the last one, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, even Bernie Sanders, these people are wrong, that they're guilty and should come back and anything from being executed, according to Donald Trump and some of the people on right-wing media, but they're traitors. I don't quite understand their mindset, because if they're exposing wrongdoing and if their only crime is having broken the law that says you cannot tell the truth if you see a crime being committed, that in my eyes they are not breaking the law. It's a law that they should break.
Your thoughts? It's interesting. Yeah, well, that is the crux of the issue now for Edward Snowden. And Edward Snowden has said repeatedly he would be happy to come back to the United States if he could get a fair trial. And by that, Mr. Snowden means a trial that would allow him to make exactly this case, that it should not be a crime to report a crime. Specifically, in legal terms, what that means is that Snowden and his attorneys would like to offer a so-called public interest defense, in which they would say, look, Mr. Snowden has never denied that he broke the law. It is unequivocally clear that under U.S. law, to disclose highly classified information to unauthorized individuals, much less to us in the press, that's illegal. Snowden has never denied that. He simply says, I had no choice but that. It was either that or remain silent, because the other alternative that is proposed by Hillary Clinton, President Obama, and many others, is that, look, Snowden broke the law. He must come back and, quote-unquote, face the music. That's what Hillary Clinton said last October in the first presidential debate when they asked her about Snowden. She said, you know, he broke the law deliberately. Come back, face the music. And she added, and this is the really critical part, he could have been a whistleblower. We have whistleblower laws. He could have availed himself of those laws. And I think there would have been a very good reception to him, unquote. And my response to that is, well, tell that to Tom Drake, tell that to John Crane, tell that to all the other whistleblowers who have tried to work through the system, who are straight arrows in most cases. You know, this book, Bravehearts, I write about a lot of other whistleblowers. The thing about the whistleblower is that it is in their DNA to absolutely stay fast to the truth. No matter what kind of official retaliation comes, and it always comes, they stick to the truth. That is in their DNA. And so they go forward. Most of them totally believe in the institutions where they serve. And so they are oftentimes quite shocked to find that when they come forward, and John Crane is an excellent example of this, they come forward and do what law says. Federal employees are obligated under the law to report so-called waste, fraud, and abuse. That is the law. They are obligated to do that as a public servant. When they do it, many, many times, they are punished. And so the law is, especially in Snowden's case, he's charged under the Espionage Act. The Espionage Act specifically excludes the possibility of a public interest defense. That needs to change.
I have two issues I'd like for you to follow up and address before we go over to John. The tobacco industry did not lose a single major lawsuit, no matter how many times they were sued for causing emphysema or lung cancer or other health-related problems because of cigarette smoking for over 100 years. And then when they did lose, they didn't lose because of the science not being there. They lost because they were caught lying. But under the subsequent revelations, the FDA and the U.S. Public Health Service both were fully aware that the ingredients, proprietary ingredients, cause cancer. They knew this. So then I have to ask, if you work for a government agency and you know that what's going on in that agency is unethical, immoral, injustice, whether it's against law or not, don't you have some responsibility to say something? That's one example.
Okay.
Another example is people who came forward, including the former head of the co-head of the Senate hearing on 9/11, who said, I have seen these 28 pages, and they're devastating, and I cannot tell you what's in them. Well, then the government doesn't want to tell us what's in them and then says, well, there's nothing in there that's that important, and it's a whole lot of nothing. And then we find people who are members of both the House and the Senate coming forward saying, we've seen really damaging information on different things, right? Going clear back to Vietnam and the Phoenix Project. But we can't tell you what it is. And yeah, we knew that there was illegal bombing under Kissinger of Cambodia, but we can't tell you about that.
Right.
So here we have all these government employees at different times coming forward and saying, I signed an agreement. I could not say what I saw or was exposed to because I could then have the retaliation of the government. And I'm asking, at what point does a person gain the courage to say, well, be damned what could happen to me if something horrendous is occurring because our governmental agencies or those who are creating these programs are breaking the law? Isn't that the larger issue? And then I'm not seeing that the government and the media especially is saying, yes, let's start changing the laws to protect agencies, including your former agency, which in my opinion is a criminal organization, how it's acted in spying on all of us without our permissions and without due process and without letting us know that we were a victim of that, that every single thing could be captured. Who gave them that right? And yet I haven't seen any of those people go to jail or held accountable. And yet anyone who reported on that, like yourself, could be held accountable. There's something wrong with that. I'd like you addressing that, and sure. I'd like you to address the same thing.
Well, your bafflement is shared by many of the whistleblowers that I write about in Bravehearts. So let's go back to Daniel Ellsberg. He asked exactly that same question, and he came to that moral moment. He, of course, was the grandfather of whistleblowers. He was the one who released the Pentagon Papers in 1971. And he found, at a certain point, he could not live with himself. He couldn't live with himself, the guy he looked at in the mirror every morning, knowing what he knew about Vietnam. And so he eventually tried again to raise it through channels. That got nowhere, and so he felt morally compelled to do it. I interviewed Dan again for this book, and he was saying that he was so happy to see that Edward Snowden had come forward, that Chelsea Manning had come forward in recent years. But he said, exactly as you just said, Gary, why is it that after 40 years, there's only three of us? There's only three of us who have come forward. There are thousands of people in the government who knew about this. And in Snowden's case, at least 1,000 people, this is Ellsberg's estimate, at least 1,000 people have the security clearances necessary to know about that mass warrantless surveillance program. Why didn't they come forward? That's one of the questions I probe in Bravehearts. And I will say that the individuals who do come forward are unique. They have this DNA that says, I've got to do that. And one of the ones I quote says, look, I'm not a hero, but I have to live with that person I see in the mirror every day. Other people who don't come forward say, well, you know, I've got a job, I've got a wife and kids, I've got college payments, I've got a mortgage due, I just can't rock the boat. But they, too, pay a price. It's a psychic price. It's an emotional price. There's a gentleman named Ray McGovern. Perhaps you've had him on your show.
Many times.
And Ray has said, he said very movingly said, you know, when I look at that Vietnam Wall Memorial in Washington, D.C., and I see the names of all those dead soldiers, I feel responsible for half of them because I had information that I could have brought forward as a senior official in the U.S. Diplomatic Service at a time when only half of those names were already dead. And I didn't do it. And I didn't do it because I was about to start a new posting in Berlin. It was exciting. My wife wanted to go. We had just got a new house. I wasn't willing to risk it. And I have had to carry that burden with me for the last 40 years. So I would simply say that, yes, whistleblowers can pay a terrible price. Look at Snowden. He's living in exile. Tom Drake, who we'll talk about later in this program, had his life ruined when he tried to blow the whistle on the surveillance efforts. But the people who don't come forward, they pay a price, too. It's a different price, and they have to live with themselves, too.
I understand, but I do not balance the difference between 58,000 who will never have a chance to have another word in this life versus those who knew that the Gulf of Tonkin episode was a fraudulent episode.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And also with the 9/11, with the going into Iraq and blaming, you know, Saddam Hussein, too many people knew. In fact, Ray McGovern on this program recently said there was an entirely different group of people working within the intelligence community and the CIA working with the Vice President Dick Cheney.
Right.
And so they had their own intelligence going on, what they were manufacturing out of the White House. So this whole idea of the New York Times and Judith Miller and everyone saying, we were just given wrong information. No, you created the information that you were given. Let's go over to you, John. Thank you for being on today. John, would you follow up with Mark's comments and share a little about your experience working in the environment that currently exists within the Department of Defense and the National Security Agency, and also how much it's grown? I looked at how large it was at one point and how large it is today, and how many other agencies are involved in intelligence gathering, and how many of the things they're doing now that we're looking at are either unethical, unnecessary, or actually illegal, and why there is not an effort to change this environment. You were a part of that. Could you explain what you saw from the inside, please?
Yes, I was. That from the inside, I'm the former Assistant Inspector General for the Pentagon. My office involved transparency and accountability. And part of my responsibility was to run the hotline for the entire department. And we have 1.2 million military members. We have almost 700,000 civilians. So we have 2 million people. I was responsible for the whistleblowing rights of half of the federal workforce. And you have, I think, put your finger on it exactly right. How does or how do organizations encourage principled organizational dissent through the whistleblower system without having those people destroyed? And we have too many examples where certain individuals like Mr. Drake, Thomas Drake. Drake came to us as a whistleblower. He was a confidential whistleblower. And what that means is, under the Inspector General Act of 1978, that in Section 7 of it, when a whistleblower contacts the Inspector General, that person's confidentiality cannot be violated. That should the Inspector General give the individual's name out, that individual has to be informed, and that name can be given out only under extreme emergency circumstances, and that name can only be handed out by the Inspector General himself. When I was responsible for the hotline, for the whole department, there was not one instance when one whistleblower's name was compromised. And that's a very important point. Confidentiality is what the whole system rests on. If a whistleblower thinks that they will have their identity revealed just to have themselves destroyed, that shuts down the whole whistleblower system, because who would step forward?
Tell us what you observed that concerned you, that got you to a point where you had to make a decision to stay within the system or to abandon the system.
I was concerned about the case regarding Thomas Drake, that he had come to us as a whistleblower back in 2004, and he had concerns regarding a national security agency data collection system, multi-billion-dollar system. He contacted us, and he said it was overcost, it was certainly behind schedule, and it was not functioning the way that it should. Simultaneously, the U.S. Congress thought the same thing. We had a very extensive investigation of it, that what we found, and this was released in 2005, was that those concerns were actually borne out. And then the Congress had the system shut down. So he was a solid example of what a single whistleblower working within the system can accomplish. But then what occurred was there was an article in the New York Times in 2005, and that article broke the story that there was warrantless wiretapping, warrantless monitoring. That article caused so much concern that the Justice Department, within 2 weeks, had a formal investigation started. What caused me concern is when we had the IG whistleblowers, when they had their homes raided, and we called them 4+1, and those were the 4 whistleblowers contacting us through the hotline system, and then it was Mr. Drake, who was a senior executive working inside the NSA, and he was our confidential source. What concerned me was when we had those homes raided, how did officials know that there were the 5 whistleblowers contacting us? Because with the protections offered by the IG Act, that they had not been informed, that they had their identities revealed, that they, all of them, one morning, simply had FBI raids. So that was an issue causing me concern, that ultimately Drake had a multiple count indictment served against him, 10 counts. 3 of those counts involved whether or not he kept classified information at home. And the trial ultimately collapsed because he did not keep classified information at home. But what concerned me is when his lawyers contacted us, they asked us whether or not we had information regarding our investigation that could be exculpatory, i.e., information that could help Drake during Drake's trial. I was the senior FOIA appellate authority at the agency, so I was the last step before the federal court system. And it was my responsibility to make sure that the Inspector General, through its records-keeping system, maintained all appropriate documents, that we had known since 2005 that there was an ongoing criminal investigation. Among the senior leadership, there was a question regarding whether or not our whistleblowers might have been the whistleblowers for the New York Times. When we had the complaint processed, and that was sent to us through the Government Accountability Project, that they wanted all of those documents. And so I asked to see those documents because I was the official processing them. And I was told that they all had been destroyed. I was concerned because we knew that there was an active criminal investigation. And when that happens, you simply maintain documents. And I was concerned also that some of these documents were secret, top secret, sensitive intelligence documents. These are documents you need to keep very careful check on regarding where they are, who has them, document retention. So when I was told that those documents had been destroyed against policies, procedures, that I wanted to use my own investigative staff looking to see what had actually happened. I was told that I wasn't allowed to look into the matter. And then 2 months later, the Inspector General DOD told the Department of Justice that they had been destroyed according to a standard document destruction policy. As the FOIA appellate authority, I could not have had agreed to that statement.
That's a very polite way of saying that they lied, John.
Who authorized them to destroy these documents?
What is underway right now is I went to the Office of Special Counsel, and they're a federal prosecutive agency, and they are the ones protecting whistleblowers against retaliation, waste, fraud, and abuse. That I've spent the last 15 months working with them. Based upon my evidence, based upon interviews, that they have ordered, not requested, ordered an investigation, because they had reached the internal legal determination that there was a likelihood of evidence that that information had been destroyed. That ordered investigation will start on June 1st. And that investigation will actually be handled through the Department of Justice Inspector General's office. So in regard to the answer to your question, that we are still finding out those facts.
Would it be fair to say it could not have been a low-level employee? It had to have come from someone who had the power and authority to get them destroyed?
That will be investigated, but one of the most important aspects is when the Office of Special Counsel has an investigation ordered, that then the agency responds back. I see the response, I can comment on it, and then it gets sent to the President himself, the Speaker of the House, Senate President Pro Tem, and then it gets publicly posted that this investigation, this will be thoroughly transparent. The whole American people will be able to log onto the Office of Special Counsel website just to see what was the agency response and what was my response.
Have they retaliated against you?
Yes, they have.
How?
They removed me from my job. I was a senior executive. I had worked with the Inspector General 25 years, and I had worked with all of the inspectors general since it was founded, because I'm a former Hill staffer, Capitol Hill, and so I actually knew the staffers writing the Inspector General Act, and that was reacting against Watergate, and that was all about transparency. And that was about the general compact between the governed and those people governing them. That what the Congress tried to create was a separate institution reporting both to the executive branch and the legislative branch, giving a window of transparency to the American people. Because the theory is should the governed not give their consent? That should they not give consent because the system's opaque, then you will lose the trust of the governed.
Well, that's happened. Back to you. Thank you, John, for that. I believe that what we are seeing in those people leaning towards either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, ideally it should have been Jill Stein, but she's out of it, as far as getting the recognition for her cause. The public has never seen the type of secrecy that we're now seeing, but also this specific administration has gone out of its way to prosecute those who would uncover crimes, and not just prosecute them, but based upon the historical level of what would happen if you went to jail, that's out the window. Some of these people could go to jail for long periods of time, and that sends a chilling message to anyone who decides to come forward. Before you come forward and tell anything that is going to embarrass someone, understand that there is going to be a whole lot of people coming back against you. Do you have the resources, the will to do that? The public sees this. I mean, the public is not out of the loop completely between John Drake and other people. They've been out there in the media, either the left media or the right media, independent media. But nothing seems to change. There seems to be groups of people who are permanent technocrats who are in that loop of power in Washington, who seem to go on forever, and nothing is ever done to hold them accountable. So all of us are frustrated at this point because we have OPEC, we have deceit. We have a president who comes in and Congress goes ahead and says, all right, what we did with FISA was wrong, so we'll change the law. You can't do that, but they did it. It's like saying we killed those people, robbed those banks, kidnapped those, but now we're going to make it okay. So let's look forward, not back. And they don't do that for you and I. If you commit a crime today, you're going to be held to today's standards. Yet with these departments, including the National Security Agency, the CIA, and all the rest of them, none of them have been held accountable. The systems have not changed. They simply became even more opaque. Your thoughts?
The hypocrisy is stunning, isn't it? Staggering, really. You look at General Petraeus, perfect example, who, of course, was guilty of the very same thing they accused Tom Drake of keeping classified information at home. And worse, in the case of Mr. Petraeus, he gave highly classified information to his biographer, who happened to as well be his mistress. And what happened when General Petraeus was found out about this? Basically, a legal slap on the wrist. He was not required to serve any jail time. He did have to pay a fine, but he basically skated off. And to your point of how they don't seem to, they feel above accountability, even though that's what happened to Petraeus as recently as December, right? 5 months ago. Some interviewer asked him, what should happen with Snowden? Should he be prosecuted? And Petraeus said, quote, absolutely, absolutely, unquote. Now, Petraeus and Snowden, leave aside whether you agree with what Mr. Snowden did or not, it's the same crime. You know, you had classified information that you gave to unauthorized individuals. That's the term in the law, unauthorized individuals. That's illegal. Mr. Snowden has admitted it. General Petraeus admitted it after the fact. But who gets punished? Never the top guys. And in fact, I have a long passage in the book, Bravehearts, about this, saying that the double standard is standard. It's not just Petraeus. It's all of these guys. When they get caught breaking the law, there's one set of rules applies. When it's Tom Drake, when it's John Kiriakou, the CIA agent who talked about the U.S. using torture under the Bush administration, and any number of other whistleblowers, John Crane is a perfect example as well. They go after them. The system goes after them. And so I think that that's an important thing to bring out. I would differ slightly, though, Gary. I don't want to encourage a cynical view that nothing can change. I'm very struck by what Edward Snowden has been saying in recent days. He reacted to these new revelations that John Crane has brought forward, and he said we need a total overhaul of our whistleblower system. Right now, it is usually a mistake for a federal employee to go to the inspector general because you're going to get crushed, just like Drake did, just like they're trying to do with John Crane. Snowden continued, you know, there are risks in going to the press, but at least you have a chance. And this is a place, by the way, where it is so important to recognize the role of the independent press, whether it be the Gary Null Show or Democracy Now! Or The Nation magazine, where I write, or our overseas colleagues. You know, I broke this story in the Guardian newspaper, partly because they've owned the Snowden stories from the get-go, but also because they are not afraid to challenge state power. It's not an accident that I chose a foreign news outlet for this story, because it is very hard to find a mainstream American outlet that is that willing to challenge state power. But I do think that it can happen, and I think also, you know, you mentioned Bernie Sanders. It is absolutely true that Hillary Clinton and President Obama and certainly Donald Trump have been very negative about Snowden and saying that they basically want him to go to jail. That is not Bernie Sanders' position. Sanders was asked about this specifically, and Sanders said, it is true that Mr. Snowden broke the law. That's factually accurate. But he said he also performed a very important public service, and that fact needs to be taken into account in how the U.S. legal system deals with him.
I agree. Just to summarize here, I believe that the entire system should be changed. I do not believe we are a healthy democracy when those of us who are activists or advocate on the part of independent thought that goes outside of the mainstream should be targeted. Right now, all of us, I was the keynote speaker for March Against Monsanto rally this year and last year and year before. I'm on a watch list now because of that. I have the Progressive Radio Network, which has more progressive voices on it, so we reach all over the world. Everyone's on a watch list. Why? Why, when we do not slander, we do not defame, we do not deal in anything, it's not accurate. In fact, the scholarship is extremely high. When you write for The Nation magazine, and you will also find out when you step into the quarter of the independents out there, they hold a very high standard. You can't just go out there and start blathering.
Because otherwise you'll get sued.
That's correct.
Yes.
So why is it that we who are trying to show what is wrong and how to make it right, why are we now the targets instead of those who committed the crimes? Where are the people that actually did the waterboarding? Where are their trials? Where are those who created false intelligence that got us into Iraq? Where are those that manufactured massive scams in Afghanistan to steal billions of dollars? We know $5 billion went missing in cash. Why isn't that a major priority? Because that's taxpayer money. Why is it that the crimes and misdemeanors of the government are not made accountable as our crimes and misdemeanors are and should be? And why is it that we have these double standards? I think it's time that we get people in office who are more progressive, more independent, who really want to change and care about the Constitution, our rights, and make these changes. Change the law, not simply hope that you get the right kind of arbitrators who will say, well, you did good. Bernie Sanders said you did good, but you broke the law, so you still got to go to jail. That doesn't help anyone. But if you say this is a bad law, and we have a lot of bad laws, not at the federal level, also at the federal level, but also at the state level. Now we just found out after 35 years, I'm a journalist, you're a journalist. Did you know that after 35 years, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, representing between 200 to 300 major corporations, were meeting twice a year in exclusive resorts, writing bills that they gave to legislators to go back at the state level and become laws? Not once until they were exposed did we even know that all these laws are being written, not for our benefit, not for the state constituents' benefit, exclusively for the benefit of ALEC. To me, that is so unethical. And I've said everyone who met with these people who came back and falsified that this was their bill should resign or be forced out, recalled, because you don't represent the people. So if we started this changing what's wrong with government, We need to put it through a super cleaning process. And I'm glad that you're stepping forward. And after all, the other people were not as high up in the chain of command. Well, Benny was, but they didn't have your position. You're rather unique, and I'm surprised that 60 Minutes has not contacted you yet. Because John Crane, you were there at the Inspector General's position beside that Inspector General. You are a public historical public servant. You know all the things that went on. You know the right processes and the wrong processes because you witnessed it. You were there as an advocate for the right. Now you are a victim of that for speaking the truth. So who better than someone who sat beside the most powerful person in that division where the buck stopped with him in making the ethical and legal decisions? You have the information. You have the treasure trove of information, and I hope that you get a lot of attention. So I'm asking the journalists listening right now, the broadcasters listening right now, to invite this person on the air, invite them both. Mark Herzog, you are an advocate par excellence. I thank you for your good work and all your books. We look forward to our another interview, and I will see that all of our hosts, Bonnie Faulkner, Guns and Butter, all the people, Ray McGovern, who's starting a show in June here, that all these people, Ralph Nader, invite you on to have this conversation as well.
Thank you.
Thank you both for being with us today. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on the next program.